You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And I have an amazing treat for you. I've got my friend Scott Luna from Breakaway Practice, and he's going to be sharing with us the biggest lie when it comes to the new patient flow that we're not taking a look at. So you're not going to want to miss this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. We'll see you in a second.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show, and you're going to love today. So everybody's looking for new patients, and when it comes to new patients, we're being taught a lot of things in the industry. And so I've got my buddy from Breakaway Practice, Dr. Scott Luna, on today, and you're going to love this. So please, you are going to want to grab a pen for this one because he is amazing. You're going to see why in just a second. Now, I'm going to do my own intro on Scott before I let Scott talk, but here's the deal. I had heard about him from Dr. Eric Jones in Atlanta, and he's like, he called me, he said, you got to go to Breakaway. I'm like, what is Breakaway? I've never even heard of Breakaway. He's like, you got to go. So I called you, Scott. I'm like, can I come? And you're like, all right, come on down. So you invited me down. I had a chance to spend the weekend there, and it blew my mind because I've been to every practice management seminar on the planet, and I've spent my life studying things. And in just 2.5 days, you flipped a lot of stuff on its head. I found myself writing more than I'd ever written in any practice management course. And so we're going to talk about a lot of different concepts. I want to do a lot of these with you. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you have questions, if they come up, please ask them in the feed. And I'm going to ask Dr. Luna as we're having this conversation, and he'll answer them directly. But if nobody's heard of Scott Luna, who is Scott Luna? Who are you, Scott?
You know, I'm a dentist, but in my career, I've built offices, built practices, I've sold them. And right now, you know, besides the 11 practices that I personally built and sold and worked in as a dentist, now we help other dentists across the country. We help manage over 350 offices, 80 of which we've helped oversee the build of. These are all offices that dentists own. So in essence, I learned how to build and run and grow a practice very fast, very profitably, but also a very nice office, kind of an ideal office for a dentist. And we in turn started teaching people how to do that and started doing it for them. I've got a large team of people, 33,000 square feet, that does all kinds of stuff, marketing and insurance verification and phones and IT, just a lot of stuff. We're busy, 350 offices.
That's crazy. And then you also took me over to the office. This was like your, you know, the collaboration of all the things that you learned in the gorgeous office that you showed me. It was beautiful. If anything, you got to go see that office. It's beautiful. Now, I want you to tell your story because in 2007, you had 3 practices. You accomplished more in dentistry by the age of 30 than most people will ever do in their lives. You built 3 practices. Is that right? And then you sold them to Heartland. Is that what your story is? Like, tell me your story.
I built a first office right out of school. So I graduated 2005. And at the time, we were seeing 350 new patients a month, which was really hard to manage. That broke so many things in my practice, how I scheduled, how I billed, how I did exams, everything just broke. And I had to figure out a completely different way to do everything. 4 years later, that practice turned into three locations with 10 dentists. I ended up selling that group. I think we were doing around 8 or 9 million in collections. I had sold that to Heartland because I actually broke my back and I couldn't be a dentist. And then so I had a young family, I decided to sell. So by the time I was 29 or 30, I guess, when I sold the first group.
Okay. What happened after that?
So all the lessons I learned in having associates and opening multiple locations and we were seeing 700 new patients a month by that time. We learned how to bill better. We learned how to do insurance. We learned how to do phones and marketing. We learned how to do all these things better. I thought, hey, I got it down. I'm great. I'm awesome. I'm going to go build seven more. Mm-hmm. And so I built seven more 5.5 hours away. Every Monday, we opened a new location. And I did a lot of things well, and I failed a lot there too. And so what I thought I knew with three, I realized I didn't know. And having seven at once, absentee owned in a way, absentee managed, I had to learn all kinds of new stuff. And that was tough. I've gotten beat up by the whole process. But fast forward to today, and we teach everything we learned and we do everything we say, and it's working very well. Our typical startup does 1.7 million year three. So, you know, it's going very well for a lot of people, including myself.
That's awesome. Like, that gives me chest pain knowing that you opened up a practice, that many practices that fast. I can't even fathom how challenging that would be. Now, you're a big data guy. Like, you don't like all the, you know, people saying, oh, this is how it works. You're just like, let the data speak for itself. And you've learned some pretty profound things when it comes to the new patient process. Like, what were some of the hard lessons and what do we not know? Because you and I were talking about this beforehand. Dentists are being taught a lie when it comes to new patients. What is the lie?
That's correct. And before I actually say it all, let me tell you that I come from a standpoint of data. So I don't hope that this works. We go do it and measure it. And through measuring it, through split testing things, by having a big sample size, I mean, 350 practices, we handle 30,000 phone calls a month. That are all measured, they're all tracked and audited. So I know how often we schedule patients from a phone call. All of that is measured. We have a massive amount of data that we mine to figure out what's the best way to do something. Okay, so in mining all that data, I realized that when I do marketing, I'm just doing wishful thinking. I'm convinced by some marketing firm to do a postcard or to do this folded mailer, and they send it out and they say, look, it works across the country. It'll work for you. But I don't know if it really does.
Right.
Because here's the thing. New patient flow comes primarily from our data, comes primarily from doing two things right, doing the phones right and doing split testing right. On the marketing side, and no one's doing split testing and no one's listening and measuring the phones properly.
Right.
So in essence, we are just sending stuff out, crossing our fingers. It feels good. It feels like patients are coming in, but I can give you some very specific details to show you.
Yeah.
It's not
now,
true.
Now go back to that, Scott, because what is a split test? Because I've heard people use that term. So if I'm watching this, I'm a 32-year-old dentist. What is a split test? What is that?
In marketing, we can't typically outsmart what works and doesn't work. We many times don't know. We think a pretty postcard that shows that we're quality practice is what works. But we may not really understand that it's not the postcard. It should have been a four panel and it shouldn't be as pretty. And maybe it shouldn't talk about how good we are. It should talk about Invisalign, or it should talk about how affordable we are. We don't know until we go out and perform an experiment. And the experiment is called a split test, where we say, okay, let's test reputation message, we're good, against value message, we're affordable. Or let's test a mailer against a four panel. Let's test Invisalign offer A against Invisalign offer B. And not only that, we have to perform the test with a demographic that's similar. Mm-hmm. So I might have four different neighborhoods around my practice with different demographics. I have to perform this test in each neighborhood and do it enough to get enough sample size to then have a conclusion that I can count on. Here's an example. One of my practices I currently own. We went and tested four panels against postcards. We tested value messages against reputation messages. And we tested four different neighborhoods. And what we found is that three of the four neighborhoods all responded differently. A value postcard was a huge success in one neighborhood and a massive failure in another. Reputation four panel, same thing. Three of the four neighborhoods all had different results. Yet had I just listened to some postcard company or some marketing firm selling me a beautiful piece and just done that, I would have failed three out of four times.
Wow.
And I only know this because we track every call. We listen to the call. We see if the patient schedules. If they do schedule, we code them in the software according to that split-tested mailer in this example. We see if they show up, and then we see what we produce. And then at the end of all of that, we then do the data analysis, and we show this mailer brought in the most patients, the most production for this neighborhood. In this neighborhood, this is what we should do for the next year.
Yeah.
Sometimes we find we shouldn't do anything for a neighborhood. I love that because I don't want to spend the money. But, you know, a marketing firm has never come up to me and said, hey, Scott, you know, you shouldn't spend the money.
Right.
You shouldn't hire us to do mailers for you. That never happens. So this led me to have to build it all myself and do it in a way that saves money and do it in a way that's more effective. Not just with mailers, with Facebook ads, with pay-per-click ads on Google AdWords, as much of the marketing as we can do. Radio ads, it all has to be split tested and then tracked and patients tagged and then reported. I want to know marketing piece A is three times more valuable than B. So I'm just going to put my money on marketing piece A.
Well, you're creating a predictable workflow, something that can be repeated, and you're not guessing. You use the phrase, I think you said when I was down there, you know, data removes all emotion. You just don't get emotional. You can look at the data. Now go back to, there's two things. You said the phone, because you track all these phone calls. Take us through some of the things that we don't know when it comes to monitoring all those phone calls that you guys monitor.
Yeah. So there's two big important numbers that they might be some of the most important numbers in a dental office. And that is what our answer rate is on the phones, what percent of the phone calls we actually answer, and of the ones we answer, how many convert to an appointment? Conversion rate, answer rate, conversion rate. So the answer rate, what we're seeing across the country is that the answer rate is typically around 62%.
Okay.
For dental office. In other words, a third of the phone calls coming in are not answered. That is terrible.
Yeah.
But it's not because the staff are just sitting there watching the phone ring and not wanting to answer it. It's because of the way we're structured in a dental practice. We might have four or five phone calls come in a very short amount of time. We might only have three or four lines, only two people really answering, and one of those two people is already confirming an appointment.
Right.
Or checking someone in or verifying insurance or helping the back somewhere. And what ends up happening is during the spike of phone calls, we miss most of those. So that's a big problem. You know, for example, our offices have a blended average missed call rate of less than 5%. So a typical practice will answer 62 out of 100 calls, and mine will answer 95 out of 100 calls. Here's another reason why that's a big deal. We know from listening and tracking these phone calls. See, I've got a call center. Part of my company, we have a call center. And what's interesting is when we answer phones for seven offices in one market, if we miss the call, that new patient doesn't just wait and call us back later. They call the next office. And many times it's an office that we answer for already.
Right.
Or what we also do, if we miss a call, we call the patient back proactively. And we find the vast majority of times we call them back, they already called someone else and scheduled.
Wow.
See, if we miss the call, we lose the patient. So answering only 62 out of 100 calls is not good. And dentists have no idea. They're not tracking it. They don't have call track. They're not looking at it, measuring it. They have no idea. Their team looks busy. They have no idea if they're answering 62 or 82 or 95 or 22. No idea.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I love this. Now, I just want to clarify, they're missing 62%, right?
No. They're answering 62%. They're missing 38%.
Okay. All right. So wanted to clarify. So I'm taking notes here. That is amazing. Okay. So
the second number is more important, almost. The second number is conversion rate.
Okay.
So if I speak to 100 patients on the phone that are new patients, how many of them will schedule? All right. An average practice is converting about 40% of those patients. They talk to 100, only 40 schedule. The reason why it's so poor has to do with how the team member is trained. And sometimes it has to do with the policies in the practice.
Okay.
Policies are easy to explain. Are we open on Fridays or not? Do we take MetLife? Do we see kids? Those are policies. Are we open after hours, right?
Right.
If we're not, well, that hurts the conversion rate. But the biggest thing that affects conversion rate is the team member following a scripted path to conversion. Are they saying things in the right order that cause patients to schedule more often? They're speaking truthfully. They're speaking honestly. They sound nice, but they're doing it in a way that gets us a scientific measurable increase in conversion rate. Last month, my team had an 84% conversion rate.
Okay.
Think about this. Do the math, all right? A typical practice will get 100 phone calls. They will answer 62 of those.
Okay.
And of those 62, they convert 40%. They get 25 new patients a month. My practice, out of 100 phone calls, I answered 95 and I converted 84%. I get 80 new patients a month.
Yeah.
They got 25. I got 80. And if I allow my schedule to grow to see those 80, I will grow way faster than their practice.
Right. Give me an example of the sequence. When you talk about the sequence and a team member's trained, because you audit your callers, the people that answer your phones, you audit them quite regularly and you want to make sure that they've got the sequence. But if I'm watching this and I'm a young dentist, what is a sequence? Like, because I'm so busy doing dentistry, she's really nice at the front, but I've never done any training with her. So Scott, where do I start? Like, what would I teach my team member that I care about?
Okay. So before you know what to teach, you need to understand the problem.
Okay.
So we have to like own the problem. Like, I'm fat. I need to lose weight, right? Well, we're not going to lose weight until we say, well, I'm fat. Okay. So right. To own the problem, what I would recommend people doing that are listening to this is first go call another dental office.
Okay.
Call 3 or 4 local offices, pretend like you're a patient and just ask the question, how much is a crown? That one question, and you will hear horrible discussions come from the front office team because they don't know how to handle that question. It's an awesome question. I want patients asking me how much is a crown because they want a crown. Like, I have the ability to convert them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just listen to what's been told. I mean, they don't follow a path to conversion. It's rare they even ask if you want to schedule.
Right.
So that's step one. Now, to train someone on how to do it, there's a couple options. Number one is you can hire a consultant to train your team. Number two is you could go to a seminar to train your team, right? Or number three, you can read and wing it and look on Dental Town and watch podcasts and try to figure it out on your own.
Right.
My opinion is because it's one of the key numbers in a practice, you got to do it the best you can. If there's anything worth investing money in, it's your conversion rate on the phone. Of course, I guess the fourth option is you can hire someone else to answer your phone that already has a high conversion rate, like me, my company. But there's other companies besides me. I don't know what their conversion rates are, but if their conversion rate's better than yours, it's worth sending them the new patient phone calls. Now, the sequence, you asked about the sequence, so I'll go through that. The way we found the best sequence for answering a phone call is a patient calls, and the first thing they do is they typically ask a question. And the question might be, you know, how much is a crown, or do you take my life, or are you open on Fridays, or where are you located? Do you see kids? And the sequence we use is we have to handle that question, but we have to take control of the call. This can't be patient asks a question, I answer. Patient asks another question, I answer. You know, do you take my life? Yes. Do you see kids? Yes. Are you open on Saturdays? No. Because when we do that, typically the patient says, okay, thanks a lot. I'm going to check my schedule and call you back. Hang up. So what we have to do is we have to take this patient who's trying to judge us on this phone call, and we have to walk them down a comfortable path so that we'll convert them to an appointment. So if they say, do you take kids? We say, well, yes, we do. Do you have any kids? Oh, and see, now I'm asking the question. So
right.
You see kids? Yes, we do. Do you have any kids? Oh, yeah, I got three kids. Oh, well, how old are they? 2, 5, and 8. Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, are you calling us to bring them in for a checkup and a cleaning, or does one of them have an emergency? Oh, no, this is just for a checkup and the cleaning back to school. Well, wonderful. We'll get that scheduled. I need to get some information from you first. Is that okay? Sure. Now we're scheduling.
Right.
Okay. That's easy for me to just whip out like that to you. There's multiple scripts like that. If an emergency patient, well, we'd say something differently. It's easy for me to say that to tell a scheduler, say this, here it is printed out, but that's not enough. If we're running a company, we can't just say something and walk away and assume it gets done. We have to cultivate and maintain the most important systems in the practice. And to do that, we have to audit.
Right.
So it almost steps back to what do I do as a practice owner every day to make sure the key things are healthy in my machine, my practice. I've got to have a checklist where every day, every week, and every month, I am just glancing at this very important thing to make sure it's still healthy. And on the phones, that means I'm listening to phone calls and I'm looking at a report that says what's our missed call rate and what's our conversion rate. Like without that, this is a waste of time to talk about because
right.
It won't change without that.
Right. Yeah. And you use the word checklist or just the audit. And I heard you say this. You said something like you have a checklist or an audit, not because your team members don't know what to do. Like, take us through that process because you have to have a system for this, correct? Because they're trying to do the best they can and they want to do the best that they can, but they can't do it just because you told them to do it. Can you explain that?
So put yourself in my shoes, right? I've got 4 young kids. I'm a soccer coach. I'm on the school board. I'm on the dental school board. I have 150 staff in this building. We're connected to 350 offices. We've helped build 80 in 3 years. I lecture to 1,200 people a year. I'm a busy guy. How on earth can I make sure our conversion rate is 84%? So same thing. Let's say we're a dentist. We have 1 location with 5 staff. Well, if I can do it, that dentist can do it using the same system. So the system is the people need to understand how to achieve success. They need to understand how to measure it. Okay. So if we talk about conversion rate, I have to give them the tools that they can now have a high conversion rate, say this. I have to give them the number so that they can follow the score. Are they getting a good conversion rate or not? Right. Now I got to make sure that they're winning this game. So I've got to go audit to see if they're doing what I trained and to see if the number is healthy. Now, that's the general picture, okay? Now let's get a little more granular here. Exactly how? My team members have to do 20 or 30 things every day, and they have to be done. We can't screw it up. We can't forget to post payments, right? We can't forget to send claims. Like, they have to be done. How do I make sure they remember? I have a checklist that says, look, team member, every day you have to do these things. So here's a checklist so you remember. Now, here is how you do it. Here's the checklist so you remember. And in case you don't know how to do it, here's how you do it. But now I've got to go in and see, did you do it? And what's great is auditing, if they did something, takes seconds. Fixing it, if I don't audit it and I let something implode and then fix it, that takes months.
Yes.
So if I audit, it takes seconds. And the beautiful thing is every time I audit, I will say, great job, or what is this? I am giving them a daily reminder, just a few seconds, that they need to stay focused on this checklist.
Right.
And therefore they do it. Now, how do I remember? Well, I've got my own checklist. And shoot, I can show you right now. Here you go.
That's awesome.
For today. So a checklist is a reminder system. It keeps us focused. We can't show up to work and just prep teeth all day and go home and think our business is going to grow and run itself. someone's got to also be the owner, the CEO. That's what we sign up for when we own a practice. We're also a CEO. We also have to follow best practices as a CEO.
Right. And if I'm a team member too, now think about this. If I'm a team member of yours, I need that because I want to succeed. And so a lot of times team members are thrown into it and they're just, you know, the dentist says something like this, go. And there's no roadmap. There's no structure for me to succeed. So it works to both people's benefits when you have a structure. Now, I want to get back to the biggest lie too. So when we talk about, you know, the structure and sequence of a new patient phone call, what are some of the other things that we're not aware of when it comes to these calls that happen? Because you are so good at this. It's very important for the person that's answering your phone to ask a question. The number of phone calls that you audit in which people don't ask questions, it's fascinating. And they don't ask for the appointment. You showed me all of these practices that don't ask for the appointment. And you're like, what a lost opportunity. So what else do we need to know when it comes to the sequence in the new patient workflow?
Just to show you the importance of this, a typical practice that connects to us and now follows this, what I'm alluding to, all the stuff that happens, grows 24% within 3 months. So $1 million practice goes on average to 1.24 million within 3 months. That's a massive increase because most of that growth is pure profit. So you got a dentist taking home $250,000 and now all of a sudden they're taking home $400,000. That's a big change. So it's a big deal. Something that I haven't said yet that is part of this whole thing on how you bring in more new patients, something that no one has really told dentists, but we should know, is that our ability to do the right thing on marketing and to really determine how to bring in new patients starts actually with the one first question. What is my capacity? In other words, is my schedule booked out 3, 4, 5 weeks? Or is it wide open? Do I have wide open capacity or do I have closed capacity? Marketing firms are not talking about this. And unfortunately, it's very damaging to the growth of a practice to not start with that question. Here's why. If my schedule is wide open, what's my goal? You tell me, Kirk, what's my goal if my schedule's wide open?
First of all, to reduce my chest pain and fill the schedule.
Fill the schedule. It. So if I do marketing, I want to pick the marketing that drives the most production into my schedule, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if my schedule's full though, if I put a new patient into my full schedule, it in essence pushes another patient out.
Right.
So if I have a full schedule, I don't want production for production's sake. I want the new patients spending more per patient than the existing patients. I don't want 100 patients not spending much money. I want like 10 patients spending a lot. Mm-hmm. See, if my schedule is completely full, I wouldn't want to sign on to Medicaid, right? And so if you take that concept to the marketing standpoint, we should really be measuring our marketing results based on those things. Am I trying to drive up production per patient because I have a full capacity? Or am I trying to drive up total patient flow and total production, even if they don't spend quite as much each, because I've got an open schedule?
Right.
The lie, I guess, if I sum up the lie is that no one is talking about what matters. No one. We are being sold bullshit.
Right.
Now, it's with the good intentions. They're not evil people.
Right.
But they don't own practices. They don't run them. They are not incentivized in the way we are. They're incentivized to sell a service and justify it.
Right.
So the lie is that everyone's looking at the bullshit.
Right.
Doesn't matter how pretty this postcard is. What matters is if I have open or closed capacity, am I split testing to pick the perfect thing that drives the right kind of patient into my practice? And have I answered enough phone calls and converted them to then get into that practice? That's right. How I have 2 to 3 times as many new patients, I think, as everyone else around me. I don't spend more. We're not amazing at, I'm not known throughout the country for doing something. It's just we answer more calls and we do smarter marketing using data.
Yeah. Now that's brilliant too, because I'm sure if I brought you a practice that has wide open capacity, you go, this is pretty easy. I mean, we've just got to fill your capacity. And then we have to kind of play with all these dials to make sure that we've got the right things within that capacity. And then you can obviously open up more capacity. And like, if I'm 32 years old and I have a practice and I've got open hygiene time, like you shared this with me, why not think about, hey, scheduling at the beginning and the end of the day? And why not think about maybe possibly doing some same day dentistry, because it's a huge opportunity with people calling. You know, there's just different ways you can look at this if you start with knowing your capacity and that you can greatly influence that.
Capacity is a big thing. I'm going to say something, I guess it's a little shocking to some. I've got beautiful high-end practice, PPO fee-for-service patients. I didn't spend much money building it. That's a whole nother topic. We got a very unique way where how we design and build and equip offices. But beautiful high-end office, probably one of the most beautiful offices I've ever been in. Mm-hmm. And we take Medicaid.
Really?
Why and how? First of all, why? When does it make sense to take Medicaid? I know we're all anti-Medicaid. Okay, so that's not what this is about. We're not going to talk about getting handcuffed and thrown into jail for Medicaid fraud. This is the business part of when does it make sense? Well, if we have open capacity, Medicaid might make sense for practice because in essence, Medicaid is 100% case acceptance. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather have $1,000 a day of Medicaid production than nothing and just an empty chair in my open capacity practice. $1,000, that's pure profit for us. But then how do you have a high-end practice that takes Medicaid? Well, because we don't want to make Medicaid control the schedule. What we end up doing is we don't schedule Medicaid like you think, maybe. We schedule our regular patients in our regular columns, fee-for-service, private pay, you know, PPO patients, and then we will have what I've termed the Medicaid drip column, where once every 2 hours, we have a Medicaid patient scheduled. And half of them don't even show. But the important thing is when they do show, we get to decide, do we fill a hole and do same-day dentistry or not? Mm-hmm. So in essence, we are a PPO fee-for-service practice. And when I have a hole, when I have a cancellation, I have Medicaid to fill it immediately, but I'm not slammed with Medicaid patients because I'm only booking 4 a day or 5 a day and half of them don't even show. And so no one would ever know we have Medicaid. I'm not saying that's what everyone should do.
Right.
I think it's important in talking as a CEO of a dental practice, different ideas to drive up success. There's dentists probably listening to this right now that have holes in their schedule. Right. That don't want to take Medicaid because they don't think they can be successful with it. Maybe you can in this model.
Right. You know, and every dentist is watching this, I would hope they believe this. Look, if we could just get them here, they're going to want to stay. We're going to create enough value for them that we can help them want to stay. And you can play with all these variables. And what most team members or most dentists do is they'll sign up for something like this or they'll throw it away because it's an emotional issue. And the fact is that you just backfill your practice with all these patients in a, you know, Medicaid that's less desirable, and you end up, it's the boiled frog syndrome. Before you know, you look up and you're like, what am I doing? I'm not making any money. But there's different ways to look at this that you can build an amazing practice in private care.
You know, I came from a Medicaid mill when I was waiting on my first practice to be built, and that was hell. I hated it. I am as anti-Medicaid as anyone is from that experience. But there's always opportunity to handle things in a different way. Another example here, like orthodontists. Orthodontists have to fill a ton of chairs to drive production up enough to where it makes sense for them. Because in essence, the only real production they do is when they bracket a case. After that, it's all this dead time, these dead appointments with no production. So they got to have enough patients to bracket cases all day long. Well, dentists really benefit. A general dentist can make maybe more money than orthodontists because we can run a regular schedule that has the bracketing appointment in it. And then on the side, all the dead appointments that don't take our time. So in essence, we can make a lot of money adding ortho much easier than an orthodontist that wants to open a practice from scratch and has to fill it with ortho. All of this is showing techniques on using scheduling and capacity to drive up success. If I was that general dentist, I would also then be marketing with ortho messages, split tested 2 different offers, tracking it per neighborhood to figure out what brings more ortho patients in. I'd be tracking the phone calls, right? So it all kind of comes together. And we call all of this, like on the marketing side, evidence-based marketing, right? Evidence-based marketing. And for us, the traditional way of thinking about marketing is only half of the equation. Mm-hmm. The other half is what happens in the practice. The phones, the scheduling, the capacity, all of that affects, even case acceptance will affect how my marketing is performing in a way and if it's worth doing. We have to look at the whole thing, not just like one little postcard.
Yeah, that's awesome. So boil this down. I know we only get you for a certain amount of time today, and I have so many more questions, but boil this down. If I'm a young dentist watching this, give me the simplified treatment plan here, Scott. What would you ask me to do when it comes to new patients? Just give it to me in simple steps.
Well, do the marketing I said, right? So split-tested marketing, tracking, handle the phones like I said. Lower all the barriers you can in your practice if you're open capacity.
Right.
Be open later, take insurances maybe, you know, see kids, have lower first visit fees, lower the barriers if you're open capacity. If you're closed capacity, in essence, you're raising the barriers. You want higher paying patients. And so you might not take insurance. You might start dropping insurance because you're closed capacity. Okay. So capacity is a big one. And then of course, when it comes down to you, we could talk for a long time on what you say to patients, on case acceptance, on what your financial options are. You know, I wish I could say, hey, this is the key. This one thing, that's it. Just do this. It's like 30 different knobs that you got to turn. You don't have to turn any of them a big way. Just turn all 30 gently and you'll be way more successful. And don't turn them the wrong way.
Yeah.
See, without measuring your numbers, you don't know if you're turning it the right way or the wrong way. It's not about how you feel. It's about what the number says.
Right.
If a dentist is thinking they work hard, they just don't make as much money as they know they could maybe or should. Something's broken here. They just don't know where to fix it. They don't know what to do. The financial statements aren't, I don't know. Are they really accurate? I mean, they got to log into wellsfargo.com every day to see if they're making money. That's all a sign that we're not tracking a single damn thing well. Right. We're not understanding what the knobs look like and how to turn them the right way or the wrong way.
Right. And I want to ask one of the most controversial questions, and you're probably the best positioned person in the country to ask this because you have intimate knowledge of DSOs. You know the people at Heartland. You sold to Heartland. So this question comes up all the time. People say, well, is private care dead? Is private care clinician dead? Is it all going to be at DSOs? Like, you know what's going on. You have a very good pulse. How would you answer that question? And I love how you answer. So speak directly to that controversy.
Okay. I'll tell you that 12% of all dental offices locations are owned by DSOs.
Okay.
DSOs represent somewhere around 17 to 20% of all revenue. So DSOs collect a lot more than a private office. Mm-hmm. They are growing by leaps and bounds. The jumbo DSOs are growing at unheard of paces in the last 5 to 7 years. The mid-market DSOs, so 20 to 40 offices or give or take a dozen or so, are growing at unheard of paces. Private equity money is backing a lot of this. Dental insurance companies own dental offices. Dentamax, you know, companies like Delta, Blue Cross, all of them are looking at and owning practices. Shoot, I spoke to a insurance executive a couple weeks ago at a conference, and they will own over 120 offices by the end of this year, in 2017. DSOs are happening, and there's a lot of opportunity with it. So don't just think it's all bad. It's very good for those that participate. And just because it's a DSO doesn't mean it's a bad one. There are good DSOs. There are good dentists and groups of private dentists building excellent organizations that focus on patient care. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're not all bad. Actually, there's a ton of good ones. So it's important to know that. And this will change the landscape as it is already for private dentists. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You know, when Walmart and Target grew, mom and pop shops had to change.
Right.
That's what's happening. We have to be better at running our business. And there are opportunities to partner with DSOs as well. The landscape's just changing big time. It feels like it's overnight. Every conference I go to that's focused on DSOs grows tremendously every year. Things are dramatically changing. I've got a lot of insight into it because I'm part of that circle. They're dramatically changing right now.
Right. Yeah. And it's one of those things where even Workman said a couple weeks ago or months ago, he said, you know, in 20 years, DSOs might occupy 50%, but private care dentistry is not dead. It's to your point. This is the United States of America. All of us are going to have to up our game in order to be viable and strong. It's not going to be like the old days. And I would say that for every industry. We just couldn't sit here if we have a business and go, you know, it's pretty good. Let's just coast. Because there's going to be disruptions in everything. And I think what you're talking about is, look, now is the time. You can't guess when you open a dental practice. You can't guess if the phone's being answered. You can't guess if your marketing works. You need to have that stuff at your fingertips to, number one, enjoy dentistry and to continuously grow.
You know why DSOs do so well?
Why?
They brought on a CEO to a dental practice.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't. We own a practice, but no, we've really just been owning a job, a dentist job, right? We spend 95% or more doing dentistry. So we now need to become a CEO as well. And that means we got to block our schedule to act as a CEO, to have the meetings, to look at the numbers. We have to go learn how to do these things. We have to be trained on how to influence the success of the practice in an ethical way. We can't say, poor me, or my area is like this, or, you know, my treatment coordinator is like that. No, actually, it's the owner's fault always. So we as an owner have to become a CEO. We have to own it. We have to drive success. It's not like the restaurant industry 100 years ago,
right,
where you just serve some chicken and waffles on the corner location and be fine, right? No, now you got to run a restaurant well.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the dental practice. We have to be a CEO. That's all the DSOs have really done. Best business practices. They've attempted to put best business practices inside of clinical care.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you're watching this, you might think, well, Scott, where do I start in becoming a great CEO of my own business? And I'll just answer the question. If you haven't been to Breakaway, you got to go to Breakaway. Actually, Robert Stanton wrote in the feed, Breakaway, best CE ever, hands down. And I would agree. I mean, it's phenomenal. And so, Scott, tell us, you know, if I'm watching this and I haven't heard of Breakaway, I need to go to Breakaway, where would I start? Now, you've got a business mastery course, you have a startup course, and then you also have one for corporate groups, DSOs. Is that true?
Sort of, yeah. We've got one course that teaches a dentist how to design and build a practice, saving $200,000 or $300,000, and then how to run it as a startup.
Okay.
That's one course. Second course is our business master's course. And actually, all of our courses, it's like a manual. Here we go. These manuals are like 400 pages of exactly what to do.
I've got two of them. They're phenomenal.
So the third course is for dentists that want to build their own group. Like Heartland's not coming to our course. This is for dentists that want to maybe have two or three or 10 or more even. They come to our course and we talk about the good and the bad and the ugly and what to expect. Those are our three courses. We're very proud of our courses because we feel it's one of the only places to go and actually be constantly fed the facts and the solutions, and then you walk away and do everything yourself if you want. We just give you all the answers.
Yeah, and I would echo that sentiment. I mean, it is overwhelming how many answers you give to the challenges. Like I said at the beginning of the broadcast, I wrote down so much stuff, and you are truly a giver of information. I walked away from that weekend going, I learned so much that I didn't know. And that manual itself is worth the price of admission. So even if you're a dentist and you don't have a practice, go there, because then you'll have the framework, or you'll start to think like, I could do this and I could do it my way. So Scott, thank you so much for being here. There's a link right to the right if you want to check out more of Breakaway Practice. And like I said at the beginning, I want to do a bunch of these with you on, you know, insurance verification. Like, you've learned a ton about that, you know, how to equip an op and really do it the right way and keep it simple. So thank you, buddy. I really appreciate your time today. I know you got to run. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And if anyone wants to send requests, if we do a few more of these, I mean, maybe people can give us ideas where they want to hear it, case acceptance or profit or who knows what.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're watching this, please add your questions in the feed on the side. Scott is awesome at being able to answer those questions. Ask him some tough questions too, because you'll see how smart he is. And then also add any additional questions that we could do a show on, because I've got four of them lined up here, but I want to know what you're thinking. So to all of you watching, thank you for watching the Best Practices Show. And until we see you next time, have a great day. Scott, thank you very much, buddy.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.